Hi, and welcome to Amperji Advocacy Media. This is the Journey Series video podcast. I'm Mark, a brown man with black glasses, black and white beard. Today I'm wearing a black and blue and gray and white shirt. And we're in our home office.
And I'm Crystal. Today I'm wearing my black glasses. Yeah, I have a blue shirt on. It's kind of cold outside, it's a sweater. And we're a home office.
And today we're speaking with our guest, actually, who's all the way in the UK, and she's going to talk a bit about her journey. Her name is Chloe Ann Hammond. Hi, Chloe.
Hi guys. I'm Chloe Hammond. I am a white female with brown curly hair, and a big fluffy pink jumper because it's really cold.
So, Chloe, tell us about your journey and how you got to where you are now.
So I am currently the only nurse in the UK working clinically in a wheelchair with an assistance dog. So it's been quite a journey. I guess like most people with a chronic illness, you are quite sick at some point. So for me, it was sort of late childhood. I was just, well, sort of late teenager, I guess, and I started getting quite unwell and nobody really believed me. And, everybody's put it down to the life choices I was making, like, you know how it is. And so it was quite a difficult journey to actually get any kind of diagnosis. And I spent quite a long time in hospital talking to different healthcare professionals. And I realized that there's some that I really liked that were brilliant nurses, brilliant doctors that clearly loved what they were doing. And there were some that I was less keen on, I guess. And I didn't really know why at the time. But I knew that I wanted to be a nurse and I wanted to be like the good ones that I've met. So yeah, I then went on to do nursing at university. I kind of hid my disabilities. I knew that it could be an issue. A couple of the universities that I had interviewed at had sort of pulled a face, made comments that it might not be the right career choice for me. So, well, by the time I went to my actual university, I just didn't really say much. Like, they knew that I had the support of the disabled students, but they didn't really know what my disability was or how it was going to affect me in the future. And I feel like it helped. Like, I don't recommend that as a way forward by any means. There was a lot of telling them that I'd sprained an ankle because I was using crutches because of fatigue, but I made it through and I learned what that difference was. I learned that the nurses that I liked were the nurses that were doing it right. They were the nurses that had the care and compassion, and they genuinely were nursing because they enjoyed it. And so that's what I wanted to do. So then I worked for, I don't know, like 6, 7 years, keeping everything quite hidden. Like, I'd always declared to occupational health that I had disabilities, but I downplayed it. And, I could do my job. So what did it matter? Like, people didn't need to know my own personal medical stuff. Like, so long as I could do my job and I could do it well, what did it matter? Eventually, that kind of caught up with me. I had a long time where I was off sick with chronic migraines, completely bedbound, wasn't able to do anything, never mind nursing. And I was having my own care. I was having people coming in to cook me dinner, just to look after me, get me dressed, get me to the toilet. So I saw a different side of care, I guess. I saw, rather than the acute hospital setting where you go in as a problem and they're trying to fix you and send you home, I saw the side where they see you as you, like the more person-centered care. So returning, I tried doing an admin job in the hospital. It wasn't really for me. It's so boring just sitting in an office all day. Like, when you're trained to be a nurse, that's what you want to do. Like, you want to be hands-on, you want to be helping people. So I actually quit my job in the hospital and applied for a role as an activities coordinator in a care home. And I was way overqualified and I didn't get the job. And she sort of said to me, "Why are you even applying for this? Like, why aren't you applying to do nursing?" I was like, "Oh, well, I've got a wheelchair now. Like, I can't do nursing. They told me at the hospital it's not really for me. Like, it's going to be awkward and I just can't do it." And she's like, "Of course you can do it. You just need more support." And that was such a light bulb moment in my head. Like, it wasn't me that couldn't do it. It was the environment around me that was stopping me from doing it.
Right.
So I went away and I did some other jobs for a bit. And she did that whole thing, like, oh, as soon as we've got a job, I'll get back in touch. And I was like, oh, yeah, right, of course you will. But she actually did. So I did end up working there as a nurse for a couple of years. And I learned new skills. I learned how to deal with elderly people because I trained in pediatrics. So to be looking after people at the other end of their life is completely different, but also weirdly similar. I then got Ocho, my assistant's dog. So he was very young when I was working that job, and he started coming to work basically to spend the day with the activities coordinator that was in position as kind of like a therapy dog. It was to get him used to being handled by people, get used to the smells and sounds. But he was so small, like he wasn't working by any means. I then took some time off to train him. Like, I don't know what you know about assistants or service dogs, but they take so much training and so much time. And you don't realize it, but they make you so much worse before they actually help because they take so much energy. And like, you can't just say, oh, I'm not going to get out of bed today because my fatigue's really bad because you've got that damn dog that needs training. But it's worth it. So I then started my current role as a community lead nurse. And I travel all over the country helping people with complex needs stay at home or get back home. So it could be somebody that's got maybe a breathing tube or a feeding tube. And my job is helping them be them again. Like, it's training carers on how to look after them, it's giving them goals that are actually meaningful and achievable. And do you know what? It's the best job in the world. Like, it's less hands-on nursing, but being able to teach somebody the skills that you need to give someone back their independence is so rewarding. And like, being able to say, I know how you feel, like, I've been there, but it, like, life continues. Like, it's not going to be the same, no, but like, it's still worth doing. That's kind of my story.
Yeah, I think that, so many people have experienced that, and you brought up something that's over to bring and discussed, and that's the medical model of, and not person, not the human first experience. I mean, I don't want to say that things didn't work. Everything didn't work at that, with the medical model, but it definitely took away from realizing what's important.
Yeah.
And people forgetting that there's a human there, and it's not just about me fixing you.
Yeah.
It's about humanity and being able to help you get back to where you want to be so you can be your best and help other people.
It's so interesting speaking to people who are recently diagnosed with a chronic illness or have recently been in hospital for a long time, because you're right, like, they get that feeling of they're a problem, and like, you can't fix a chronic illness, you're just not going to. And I would like to see more people promoting like well-being and actually like learning how to live with what you got, rather than you going to hospital and they fix an acute problem, but it doesn't actually fix you overall. Like, you might have had a chest infection, and sure, they fixed that, but they didn't get rid of the chronic fatigue.
Right. And speaking from my own experience, I can't speak for anyone else, but it was certainly for me, like, we'll help you get to a point, you'll achieve that, and
Yeah.
then we've done our job. No, you haven't, because those things are still issues for me. I might be good right now, but I also have ataxia, so, and it's
Yeah.
progressive. So, my challenges are not going to change, or they might change, but they might, at different points in my life, we're going to be different. And it's so confusing. and frustrating for people, you
Even
know.
things though, like wheelchairs, like they are life-changing mobility aids, and like they're so good once you know how to use them. But I was never taught. I was just given a wheelchair and off you go. Like it took me forever to learn how to go down a curb.
Yeah, like, you know, again, my own experience. I had rehab hospital, you know, where they taught me how to do this stuff, but nothing prepared me for a lifetime of other experiences in the social world and the ableist things that were going to happen and stuff like that. You know, nothing prepared me. I had a few close friends that did that. But aside from that, all of my other friends that I'd had previously shot, they were gone, you know,
I don't
so.
think people realize the additional effort, though, that goes into being disabled. So, like, I work away quite a lot as part of my nursing role, which is fine. And it's like, I know that I'll stay in a hotel and it'll be mostly accessible, but there's all the planning that goes into that. Like, where are we going to stop for breaks on the motorway? Or where am I going to exercise the dog? Or if the dog can't come with me, where am I going to take him? Like, there's so much additional planning. So,
Right.
even social things, like you want to go down to the cinema, but have they got accessible toilets? And is it actually working or is it out of order? Because it always needs to be storage. I don't know.
Yes.
Everything just takes a lot more effort and it's a lot of hassle, and you don't really want to put that on anybody else. Like you might have a friend that's going too, but you don't really want to give them that responsibility. And you kind of want to do it for yourself because you need to know firsthand that the information you've got is right.
But you also need to know and have people around you, friends around you that understand that you're not always going to be able to do everything and you need to be able to rely on them when you can't. And that's not our fault. You know, that just happens to be the kind of life we live, you
But I think
know.
it's perceived as a problem. Like it should be that you did loads on the weekend, so you're going to have a few days of not doing a lot. And like to us, I think we should be seeing that as our well-being. We should be seeing that as something that we need. It's a health need. It's something that should we should take the time to do, because overall it helps us feel better. But you kind of feel guilty that you're letting people down, or that people see you as lazy, or like.
Right. And then when they they don't realize they're doing it, but sometimes they say things, you know, that are passive aggressively, kind of, you know, like rub it off your shoulder and just move on, you know. And that it I can see, you know, that's just how they were taught to talk. You know, society has taught them to interact with disability and certain situations within the things we have to do with. But yeah, it's a difficult one.
It was a very common thing in the, in like the whole baby boomer generation, stiff upper lip kind of thing, where, just don't forget about what your problem is and just get on with what you have to do, with which can be beneficial in lots of circumstances, but for a long-term life, it's not very good. Not
And I
very
think
useful.
so many of us do that. So I battled around on crutches for 3 or 4 years because I didn't want to admit that actually using a wheelchair was going to be life-changing for me, because it felt like that was me getting, I guess, more disabled. It was making it more visual, because loads of people use crutches for anything. You've sprained your ankle, you've broken your toe, like anything. Whereas people in a wheelchair, they make the assumption that you can't walk, and they still talk down to you. Like I had a man in a restaurant offer to cut my food up. Like I don't need that. I think society still has quite a long way to go to understand that people in wheelchairs are still people. And I think that internalized ableism to not want to use the mobility stuff that is there to help you is is part of that. We need to own it. Like, we need to be proud of what we've got.
It's damaging when people make you feel guilty for needing to do something that helps you be independent or helps you, with day-to-day activities.
Then
So
you
I'm
start.
going,
Sorry, go ahead.
sorry.
I was just gonna say, then you start to internalize it stuff and beat yourself up about it without their help.
Right.
So I'm going on holiday for the first time with a wheelchair and an assistance dog in May, and the hoops you have to jump through to even be able to book a holiday is something else. Like, I've had to give so much paperwork for the dog, and then I've had to give so much paperwork for the batteries on the wheelchair, and I've had to measure the wheelchair and weigh it and just so many things. And like, I've had to agree that they can take it off me at the side of the plane and then it will go underneath, but like, I don't know how it's going underneath. There's so many things that make you feel nervous. Like, that is, I need that on holiday. I've got 2 weeks away, and if they break it, that's 2 weeks of holiday where I'm stuck. Like, it's a really scary idea, and I don't think it should be that scary to be disabled.
No,
Yeah.
it shouldn't. It
I
is.
understand it in America, you can take your wheelchairs in the cabin of the plane. Like, there's like a cubby hole or something that they fit in, but we don't have that.
No. Well, for me, manual chairs. I think
Yeah.
she's talking about electric chairs, though.
Yeah. Okay. Right.
Wouldn't it be lovely though when we can just stay in our chairs, like on a bus?
Right?
Yeah.
That would be. And I've actually seen a model of them trying to
Yeah.
design something like that. But I mean, I think that it's gonna go. I personally don't think, because I know that people in corporations
Yeah.
and they want money, and that's gonna be money taken away. No,
Right.
but the seats not there, people not paying for the seats, and then the plan itself to get it done and built and design, all that stuff is gonna take money
Yeah.
off of there.
Enough.
Yeah.
I guess there's other stuff that goes with it too. Like, there aren't disabled toilets on a plane, so
Right.
there's still gonna be ways to improve. But you're right, like, it takes up space. But disability takes up space. It shouldn't be about the cost, but I know it is.
Right. But okay, my other with that is business wise, it actually makes sense. It actually would help them.
Yeah.
The economy itself, or all economies, of our countries. Because if you give people the ability to be comfortable getting to where they're going, they're gonna spend money
Yeah.
when they get there,
And they're going to do it more often.
And those companies that are being appreciative of the airport that got them there is
Yeah.
going to support them and be appreciative and, maybe recommend them or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's gonna be a domino effect, I would think. I would think it'd be a smart business decision.
I would hope so, but change, people don't like change. It's
Well, their entire business model is built on this structure and built using this. They're just used to a certain way of doing things, and then doing things the same way is a heck of a lot easier than overhauling the entire thing and not chasing money so hard as they tend to do, and oversell flights and do all that other stuff. Yeah.
It's before this, I was a web designer and I also went to college for business administration, right?
Right.
So I have a lot of know what to do. I also have aphasia, So I can't always pick out the words I need right now. But so it's really difficult when you have all these ideas, but no one will listen to you because you can't clearly talk about what you want to talk about.
It's
No.
hard to be seen. So I guess that's kind of what I've been trying to do this year. Like I have been to so many awards nights and events and things, but it's not so much about the awards themselves. It's about being seen, like being the only wheelchair user in a room full of hundreds of nurses, like, and just pointing that out to people and being like, why is that? Like, I'm just as qualified as everybody else in the room, but why is it just me? And like, do you know what? I went to an awards night and it was amazing. And it was actually one that I won at, and they must have known in advance that I was going to win. Like, I guess that's how award nights work. But they hadn't put a ramp for the stage, so I couldn't go and collect my award. And I said in my speech, because the lady came down and we did the speech on the floor, and I said, like, this is so obvious what I'm trying to say. Like, it isn't me that's the problem. Like, I am a nurse. I have my degree in nursing. I can do the same job as everybody else in this room that's here for a nursing award. But all of you can go on the stage and I can't. And that's got nothing to do with my nursing ability. That's the environment. And so I guess that's kind of what I'm trying to show people by being at these awards nights. I want them to rethink, like, why didn't they hire the person with the disability? Like, what reason? Like, if it's not because of their qualifications, then what reason didn't they hire them?
Yeah, it should make people think about what is the real reason that those things are not available. Is it whose fault is it really? Who, where does the problem lie? Not with part of the other issue is that humans in general are builders and they want to build and fix and repair and stuff like that. But that has also been our downfall, of thinking that's made a lot of America very egotistical and thinking that, oh, that feels good. I like fixing things. I like making things look good. I like, being, I like I like the, what's the word I'm looking for? I like
Rush.
the validation given when I do something awesome and what other people perceive as being, someone who's helping someone else or making them really good. And the problem with that is it's gotten us where we are now. And we'd have to change that narrative.
I think further to that point, if you, it's the over-identification of yourself and people in general as fixers and having the ability to fix something. If you over-identify with that as sort of your personal identity, you'll go around seeing everything as fixable or broken in some way, because it has to be in order for you to be the fixer that you are.
Saying that, I'm not saying at all that don't do it, don't try to change things or fix things, because that's awesome if you can do it, but you can also see the positive in how to do it correctly and not harm other people in the process.
For sure. Like, it's really, really important to make sure that people still see people with disabilities as individual people. Like, somebody wrote in an article that I was involved with that anything's possible, but like, it is, but within reason. Like, just because I can do something doesn't mean that somebody with the same conditions as me can do the same thing. Or just because somebody else can do something doesn't mean that I can or you can. Like, we're all very different, and we all have abilities and we all should have dreams and aspirations, but you can't say that just because one person can do something, everybody can.
Right, exactly. So, can you talk a little bit more about, because it's interesting that you go all over the country and you, what would you say is the best part about doing that as opposed to working in a hospital setting?
I think the best part of it is seeing people in their own homes. I think a lot of people, when they get that diagnosis that is either terminal or is going to be absolutely life-changing, or maybe it's been like a life-changing injury, the go-to assumption is that everything is going to change in their life. But actually to see them go home and to get some element of normality back, like maybe it's a gentleman that's come out of hospital and he's with his wife again, or maybe it's an old lady that's got seven cats, like seeing her back in her natural place, like seeing her with all her belongings and her memories and back at home is the best part of the job. Like it makes it worth doing because you don't see that in a hospital. You see somebody come in that you help, that you maybe fix part of a problem. And then you kind of wish them the best and send them on their way and hope that they don't come back anytime soon. Whereas, like with my job, I see them all the time and I can be there to support them through things that change. And like I can make them feel like they've got some element of control back as well. So being in hospital, like you have your medication when you're given it and you have a wash when you're told to. But to be able to have that element of control back and say, well, actually, I quite like having my shower in the evening, not the morning. Like, great, let's do that then.
Yeah. It's also really important, I think, like when we go into the hospital, to go back to our earlier conversation about acute illnesses versus chronic ones, we go into a hospital, they generally want to fix some acute problem, right? And they're depending on the problem, they're usually really good at that. But then they discharge you, they send you home, which is where someone like yourself or a GP or family doctor is a vitally important role, because then they connect all the pieces, like and look at the whole person as opposed to their broken leg or their broken arm or their chest infection or whatever, right? And they can put all those pieces together and formulate a picture. Whereas in the hospital, they can't really do that unless they're a certain kind of doctor. And rare, yeah, it's rare to find
It is.
something.
It is. They don't have the time. They don't have the resources. Like, it's not their fault by any means. And you're right. They do a great job of patching people up and getting them home again. It's that continued care once you get home so that you don't bounce back in a couple of days.
What would you say is, well, I know it's got to be different in the UK, but in the past, what I've experienced, if I ever needed, after surgery or whatever, if I ever needed some kind of care or therapy at home or whatever, that had to be heavily justified and a lot of pre-work. So what are the requirements for having someone come in like you?
It kind of depends what you need. So we have local councils who can provide like an occupational health visit, and they'll come and have a look at your house. So they might adapt a bathroom to be a wet room. They might give you automatic doors. They might give you a stair lift. Like there's all sorts of things that occupational health can come out and do. I guess their aim is to try and keep you as independent as possible as well. If you needed more support than that, so like recovering from like a long operation or something, you would need the council would need to apply for funding for you, and then that kind of gets gets put out there and companies bid on it. It's kind of confusing, but they kind of bid on it, and then you'll get provided care by a local care team, which could be me. It's not the simplest process at all. Yeah.
I don't assume that in any country they have it right. I mean, there is, it's hard to do, but you would think in the age we live in that somewhere would have it somewhat right. I mean, humans are humans,
I mean, there's
and
other
they
help, I
don't.
guess. Like, you can apply for like a disability benefit, which has two components. You've got one for mobility and you've got one for care. So you could use that side of it for like funding somebody to come in privately, like a friend or a relative or someone to come in and help you with care jobs. So, like, like your personal hygiene and your cooking and things like that. I use mine to pay for some of the dog's expenses because, like, people forget how expensive a dog is. Like, although he's absolutely brilliant, he wasn't given to me by a charity. I bought him as a puppy and then I trained him and then we joined a charity when he was nearly two. So he's fully mine, and so his expenses are fully mine. I'm very aware of how much he costs me.
With the with I guess it could be a, I'm assuming that sort of the, I mean, when typically when we see a nurse, no matter which country it's in, we have certain expectations, right? And I imagine this was probably more of an issue once you first started, but maybe there still are things. What stigmas do you notice among patients or among your colleagues still, or even going back?
So when I applied for this job, it was still COVID.
Oh, wow.
We did it on Zoom like this. I didn't tell them that I was a wheelchair user. I didn't tell them that I had an assistance dog. I waited for day one and just rocked up like, ta-da, here I am. So it was a dangerous move for sure, and luckily it worked. The company I work for is full of dog lovers. They are super pleased to have us on board. I don't know if that was the right way to go about it, but I've had discrimination just applying for other jobs. So I'd had a care home that had just, they'd given me the job and then like kept delaying and delaying my starting date and just coming up with every excuse under the sun. Like, there wasn't space for my wheelchair to be in a care home. And then they were worried about infection control because I wasn't going to wash the wheels when I arrived, and just everything that was coming up, and it was unnecessary. And so when I kind of did the interview for this job, I didn't say, like, I decided to just go for it based on my skills and my knowledge. And, if they liked me and felt like I was right for the job, then they would have to kind of make it work because, that's the package that I come as. On the whole, my patients are actually really pleased, I think. Like, I know that they are surprised. I tend to write all of them a letter before I meet them on the first time so that it's not like a complete shock when we turn up. But they're quite pleased to have us there. They're quite pleased to see a future, I guess. Like, they're seeing what they could be doing in a few years' time. Like, seeing that their loved one that's currently bedbound and currently needs washing in the bed and, having their hair done with chronic fatigue or any kind of chronic condition, like, there is hope that things might change. Like, they won't get better now, but like, they might have that drive again to try doing the physio. They might want to try doing a swimming session or hydrotherapy or just popping out to the park, seeing some sunshine again. And I think that's really reassuring to see that you can get back from that low point. You can get back from feeling like you should
For
give up
sure.
because everybody's telling you you should. There's definitely people that talk behind my back. Like, I did a newspaper article a couple of years ago, and the top comment was, well, what can she even do as a nurse? She's in a wheelchair. And I was like, you have no idea. Like, if you'd actually met me, there's like, I can do everything every other nurse can do. But in your head, you're like, oh, well, she's in a wheelchair. So what can she even do as a nurse? Like, and that's frustrating. But once they've met me, I don't think it's a thing. Like, funny story, I worked in a care home and there was this lovely little old lady. Well, lovely. And she could be an absolute nightmare. And she used to throw herself on the floor and, very dramatic. Anyway, we suggested that she used a wheelchair so that she'd stop getting injured, basically. And she called me into her room to have a chat about it. And obviously I went in with my chair. And we're sitting there and we're looking at her wheelchair and she's sitting on the bed and she's like, oh, I couldn't face being in one of those. It must be so horrible being in one of those. And I genuinely don't think she realized that she was talking to me in a wheelchair. Like, she saw me as her nurse, not as somebody with a disability, which is kind of nice and weird at the same time. Like, I went back to the office and I was like, you'd never guess the conversation I just had.
There's definitely some some funny stories that we've heard, but it's also hopefully enlightening people that are not disabled or have different abilities. In the meeting before, we also talked about the mechanism aspect of what we both dealt with, or all three of us really, where we were just put in the position for a short, for them to be able to say, I have somebody on my staff that's this and that, and to take a picture or a
Oh,
brief
yeah, I'm always in the
photo,
front row of
or
photographs.
and say, I have this one person or these few people, two people, whatever, that can do these amazing things. But really, this is about what we're doing, not what they're doing.
I think it kind of works both ways. Like, there's definitely an element of being like the token disabled person, like when they're doing photos and stuff, like you're always going to be in it. But on the flip side of that, because of the publicity, I guess, that they gave to me and my dog, they ended up running an entire like advertising campaign looking for new staff that had disabilities that wanted to try care work. And like, they were very open to, yes, you could bring your assistance dog or emotional support dog with you to work, so long as it's trained, obviously. But like, there wouldn't be an issue with that. Like, it's a career opportunity that is accessible. So I kind of guess there's two sides to it. Like, yes, it's a token gesture, but also that token gesture can lead to doors opening for other people.
For sure, for sure. Yeah, it is a flip, of a coin. There's a lot that can be said positive for that, but we also have to get people away from, not just hiring somebody for your purposes. And being able to, like you were saying before, they had taken a picture and used that 10 years later. But and it's that kind of thing right there that we want people to get away from.
But like, in careers in health and social care, like, there is so much that people who have lived experience of disability can offer that somebody who is coming into care work able-bodied and, able-minded is not going to have the same approach. Like, there's so many opportunities that you can use your own experiences to guide the care that you're going to give other people. So I do think that it's a good career pathway for people with disabilities. Like, even if it's something like autism, like, it's a career where you follow rules. Like, there's going to be stuff that is easy to follow and easy to understand the rationale for doing it. And actually, I think they could provide amazing care to somebody because they would do it right. Like, they would want it to be done right for them, so they would do it right for other people.
Anything else?
What's your
No.
experience of being in a hospital been like?
Oh my goodness. So as we said before, it was, very much where, so rehab hospital, are we talking about the actual hospital, like before the rehab,
I guess
or
the difference between the two, yeah.
well, see, I can't really answer that honestly because I had a brain tumor and I was put in a coma, so I don't remember
Oh, I
any of
see.
that.
You missed that bit, sure.
But I do remember being transferred to I was in Chair Hospital in Houston. And obviously, I remember all of that. And I was also in something called a locked-in syndrome.
Oh,
So
yeah.
I was fully aware of everything, but no one except my mom really knew that, you know. So they would just talk about whatever they wanted and thought I didn't know anything or, you know.
So, did you
So
have help when you went home?
well, my mom,
Yeah.
you know,
And that little
yeah, well, no, she wasn't there yet.
Oh,
She
right.
that was just, you know, after Alyssa was born. So,
Yeah.
no, I had another dog at that point, but so yeah, no, it was much, but. The things I do know, I do remember, because before I was put in a coma, right? I do remember waking up and some of the things that were going on beforehand, you know, but I can't say that I fully remember that experience. So
Yeah.
I'm not the first person to ask about that.
And
as for my experience, I never really I've been to the hospital, but for very, like, it was more of an issue of, okay, there are these separate things, and my family doctor didn't necessarily, wasn't able to either because of his own ability or own enthusiasm for the work he was doing. Wasn't it didn't put all the pieces together and say, okay, we got to look into this. It was not until much later that I was sent to the right sort of neurologist that said, okay, this is what the situation is. But by then it was like, not that I could have ever done anything or, but you know, maybe I could have had some other treatment earlier on, or at least been more comfortable as a person with a disability if I knew the situation earlier on. But
Right. Like you were speaking about earlier, you know, people not believing you or not being totally open to listening to what was going on with you, you know, when you have stuff going on and you do say something and you're ignored or people dismiss you or whatever, and like in his case, there were things there you just didn't know how, you know, but you would think that professionals
right.
would catch
Yeah.
on to, oh, this and this and this is adds up, and this might be it, this might be what's going on here, you
There's that
know.
saying, though, isn't there, that doctors use something about how when you hear hooves, like think horses, not zebras. And I think that's such a common thing that people don't want to assume the rare. So they don't look for it. Like they were well aware that you had all these different symptoms and that it must be something, but nobody wanted to look further than the obvious, I guess.
Yeah. And we're also brought up with this thing that gets internalized where okay, you have to respect your elders and respect doctors and respect nurses. And people do deserve respect, obviously, but
Yeah, but we deserve respect too. Like we are the experts in
right.
us. Like you know that
Like
something doesn't feel right.
not at the expense of disrespecting your own intuition. Like, I remember very well, not I wouldn't say vividly, but several times I've gone to different podiatrists and told them that when I stand, it feels like I'm standing on a ice skate, right? Like, which means my balance is kind of weird, but no one sort of really did anything with that information. They're like, here's some different shoes, and that's all we can do.
I always have the worry that I'm not going to be believed. So like going to the doctor and telling them that you have a problem, like I'm always worried they're going to just say that it's anxiety or something, and then it will go on my record as anxiety, and then nobody will ever believe me again because they'll be like, oh, well, she's just anxious. Like it's really hard to be honest about how you feel, but not like, oh, I don't know what the word would be, but like not to put yourself into a box, I guess.
Also, I wanted to ask, did you ever experience where you felt like you kind of touched on this a little bit, but I wanted to dig in deeper if I could. Did you ever experience where you wanted to be open and honest and share your experiences, but you were also very aware that that was going to take away opportunities, so you didn't? Because I'm asking, because I find a lot of people now are kind of chastising people for not being open and honest about their and masking for their disability. But if we were put in a situation where we felt like we had to, because we're the same opportunities and the same promotions and the same paying opportunity to pay for our family and our living expenses, we're going to be harmed if we did. Did you experience that too?
Definitely. I think I've only been confident being me for the last year, maybe year and a half. Like I've stopped apologizing for things I'm not sorry for. So, when you go to a restaurant and you have to use the side entrance because the front has steps, but they've chosen to put all of their bags and stuff in the side entrance and they have to move everything. I was always going like, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry you have to move everything just for me to get in. But actually, no, I'm not sorry. Like, I want to go to the restaurant and it should be clear anyway. So I think it's only the last year, maybe year and a half, that I've owned my situation. Like I've stopped worrying what people think. I've stopped leaving situations worrying what people thought of me. Like I'm just me now, and that it works so much better. Like it feels like such a relief, like such a lift, because I don't need to try and be anybody else. Like if I'm tired and I want to go home, then I'm gonna go home.
Yeah, it's exhausting to keep up with, and if you're like me, you want to be open and honest about your situation, and but then that also puts a lot of expectations on you and takes away a lot of the opportunities that you could have. And so then you're at a standstill, not knowing what to do. And yeah, that didn't go well for me. So it makes me really mad right now when people come at disability, the disability community, for masking, but think about the situation we were put in for that to happen. So,
My biggest thing at the minute is like booking forms and stuff asking you to declare if you've got a disability. So another example would be a restaurant. on their booking form, it asks if you're a wheelchair user, because they'll have to get the ramp out, which is fine. But like, two things. Firstly, I could just turn up at the restaurant. I don't have to book. And secondly, like, I don't know why I should have to tell you in advance. Like, you don't have to tell them that you're wearing glasses. Like, if you were walking along with a hearing aid, you wouldn't have to put that in the booking form. Like, I just wish the mobility side of disability wasn't seen as such a burden on everybody else, because it's not their problem. Like, they've got to put the ramp out one time. I have to ask for the ramp 30 times a day. Like, it's not their problem. I just want them to get on with it.
Or better still, I think. Why don't they just leave the ramp out?
Well, exactly.
I mean, if there's a mom with a stroller, she might appreciate that.
I went to an event and they had a bus parked up and it had a ramp, and inside it was all about local policing and, you know, like crime in your local area and things you could do to prevent crime, which sounded great. I would have loved to have gone in and have a look. And it's a bus, so it has a ramp. They all have ramps. And so I asked them to put the ramp out. And firstly, they didn't know how to do it. But then secondly, once it was out, I said, well, could you leave it out? Because like, I'm going to have to get off the bus in a minute. I'm just gathering some information. They're like, oh, no, we can't leave it out because it's a trip hazard. Why is the ramp a trip hazard?
Oh my goodness.
It's fun, isn't it? It's fun, but it's difficult. Being disabled isn't an easy job and nobody picks it. And I think that's the thing, isn't it? Like, anybody can become disabled at any point in their life for no fault of their own. And people forget that. Like, when they are looking down at disability or they are making out that your disability is causing them an inconvenience, they forget that it could be them tomorrow. Like, you have no idea what's going to happen in the future.
And sometimes it's like, do I even want to get into this? But then you need to, people forget or don't want to go there, because it's uncomfortable, to realize that people all the time are trying to solve issues and fix problems, and that to come to a solution, sometimes you have to make mistakes and mess up, and that can be people as well. Like in the DNA editing and stuff like that,
Yeah, that makes me nervous, the whole DNA thing.
it does.
I don't like the idea that you can get rid of disability. I know that it would save money, I guess, and I know that it could save some people from quite serious conditions, but then there's other things like Down syndrome where people are living quite happily, and like, do we need to get rid of that as a disease? Like, it's a natural part of human, I think. I don't know.
But the other picture of that is where you have people thinking they can fix things by and actually causes further disability, or it they people can't figure out why they're becoming disabled through all the all the drugs we're taking and substances, foods and stuff like that, chemicals we're breathing and stuff like that. And it's gonna people can't piece these things together sometimes, then it baffles me. But that also means that more and more of the world is going to need those accommodations, need that accessible stuff, that we're speaking of.
I mean, we're all living longer, we're all working longer. Like, you're so right. Like, it's gonna be far more common as we get older that people are gonna need more adaptations and more support, that we haven't pre-planned for. And it's not like it's a surprise, is it? Like, we know it's coming.
Oh, definitely not. And we're not only speaking of, the younger generation. We have a huge baby boomer generation that's going to also need assistance and accommodations for just becoming older, which is natural. You would think they would know, to use a term that another guest used, that would what was they would
Interact again.
rethink how they want to do things, because I forgot how I said it. I love the term, but anyway, rethink how they go forward with the world, and not just how they do things and what makes business sense, but what's right and what's kind and what's going to help people.
Would you like to meet Ocho? You see her.
Yes.
What's this? Come here, I need you to come to me now. What's this? Do you want a cookie? You want a cookie?
Oh, he's so cute.
Want
Hey,
hi, big boy.
Ocho.
Boy, you're welcome.
Oh,
Thank you. Thank you,
Mom,
everyone.
I've been good. I want a treat now.
He can have treats. He's eating treats all the time. That's our show. He's 3 on Friday.
Oh, wow. Wow.
He's growing up far too fast. My
And
baby.
we talked, but you said he's
I love.
a full lab, you
Yeah, he's
said?
a full lab. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh.
He's a good boy. He's
Yeah.
been very quiet, which I'm quite impressed with.
Yeah. And it makes us so thankful to for people or pets like that are not only supportive emotionally, but supportive in helping us be independent.
So that's why Ocho is so special. So I bought him as a pet. And trained him myself. And then when he was nearly 2, we joined a charity called Dog Aid, and they literally help people change their pet dog into a fully fledged assistance dog. So they're a small charity, but they do amazing work.
Yes.
You end up with one of these good boys. Give me a kiss.
Oh, sweet.
He's
Oh.
good. Do you have a dog too, did you say?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. God, I don't know what
She's
she's sleeping back there. She's
sleeping now.
back there. Well, can I think he's on your side. Well, I don't know what she
It's
is.
spreading back.
Oh,
What is
right
she?
to the
What
side.
breed is your dog?
Back here, under here.
Oh, yeah, okay. Under the table.
Yeah. She's having a good snooze.
Oh,
Yeah.
well done. Yeah.
She's retired now, so
Yeah.
she spends time eating and sleeping.
Yeah.
You going to get another working one or no?
No. Well, I say that, but given that, I had my tumor when I was like a teen, and with ataxia, get after that, being progressive, it might come to that,
Yeah.
but I don't foresee anytime soon.
Yeah.
So, I
It
mean,
is hard work. I think it's really important to remember, like, although they are life-changing dogs, like, it is hard work and it's not for everyone.
right. Yeah. Well, we're gonna go so we can eat, maybe.
Yeah.
Well, it's been lovely to chat. Scary at all.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah, I'll look forward to seeing it.
Hey,
Yeah.
thank you, Chloe. Have a good
Thanks.
evening.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks for watching, everyone. Remember to educate, empower, and encourage someone today.
Bye.
Bye.